I'd like to call the meeting of the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. And would someone move the minutes that are in your packet? The minutes have been moved. Any corrections or additions? If not, all in favor, Representative?
I had Jim Fisher was, made a presentation yesterday with the, under that Minnesota.
Yeah, that was yesterday. That's the other committee, Representative. Any other discussions or comments? If not, all in favor, say aye.
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 The motion's carried. Today, we're going to have an overview from the Metro Council. And, we have Mr. Peter Bell and Judge Shetman. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Can everybody hear me okay? Can you hear me all right? It is a pleasure for me to come before the committee and give you an overview of the metropolitan area's transit activities. I thought I would put the presentation in context by providing just a brief overview, the briefest of overviews of the Metropolitan Council. I assume all of you are aware of the council. It was established by the legislature in 1967. There are three major areas of council activity. The first is our community development activity, as you can see on the slide. Do they have slides of
yep.
all of our presentation? As you can see in your document and then on the screen, the community development, we have four areas. Our Livable Communities grant program, about $14 million of grants we provide on an annual basis. We are the largest HRA in the state of Minnesota. We provide about 5,800 Section 8 certificates. We are also significantly involved in land planning. The 189 municipalities in the Seven County area provide a land plan or land use plan that is also known as a comprehensive plan. The next one is due in 2008. And we plan for and partially fund the regional park system. That's comprised of 53,000 acres of parkland. The second area is environmental services. We plan for wastewater services, and we process wastewater for about 108 of the 189 municipalities in 8 treatment plants throughout the Seven County region. And the third area of activity at the Metropolitan Council is our transportation activity. Our Metropolitan Transportation Services, that's the entire network of transportation services that we are involved with, and we operate the largest one of those, which is Metro Transit. And I'm going to be focusing my presentation this afternoon exclusively on those transportation activities. A major component of the transportation activities, the council plays two fundamental roles in the Twin Cities transportation. The first role is the region's MPO. We are the Metropolitan Planning Organization. In that role, the council is the chief planner for the transportation system in the Twin Cities. This is a federally designated status that we enjoy. The second role is as the largest provider and the lead agency for transit services in the Twin Cities. I'm going to talk about each of these two distinct roles in my presentation. The first is the planning function. As I mentioned a second ago, we are the MPO. There are four primary functions of an MPO. Planning, the first three key reports which define transportation in the region. The first of those three reports is what we call the Transportation Policy Plan, or the TPP. This sets long-range transportation vision. It is updated and revised periodically. The next period of time when it will be revised will be in 2008. The TIP, the Transportation Improvement Program, identifies the transportation projects which will be funded in the region over any three-year period of time. That's a major part of our planning function. And the third is the UPWP, the Unified Planning Work Program. This sets out the transportation studies and research that will be undertaken in the region on an annual basis. We also provide or undertake major transportation studies. The council participates with our major partner MnDOT and others on major transportation studies, some of which you'd be familiar with are corridor studies for transit, highway studies, etc. We also provide studies regarding the federal funding allocation. This is a highly competitive solicitation for federal funds, allocated about $100 million at the last solicitation that results in projects identified in the TIP, which I mentioned earlier. We provide a fair amount of coordination. Council staff works with many agencies in the region to plan and coordinate transportation activities and infrastructure development. And we do this principally through the TAF. In addition, we do, highway planning, transit planning, airport and freight, travel forecasting, and corridor studies. The Transportation Advisory Board, the TAB as we call it, is made up of elected officials from states and counties and staff from state agencies and citizens. If you like, I can go into the details of who comprises the TAB anyone would be interested. It fulfills the requirements that local elected officials be involved in the selecting of projects. The TAB, quite simply, is made up of council members, representatives of the MAC and MnDOT and the MAC Council, as well as local elected officials. And they not only conduct studies, but make recommendations for funding.
Commissioner Bell, could I just interrupt a minute?
Please.
Would you just state the number the members of the TAB, and also is there one from each suburb, or how is the geographic disposition? We appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, I'll very quickly go through how the membership is selected. There are 33 members of the TAB. 17 are local elected officials. Members are specified in state statute, and they are as follows. The Commissioner of Transportation or his or her designee, the commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency, or their designee, one member of the Metropolitan Airports Commission appointed by the MAC, one person appointed by the council to represent non-motorized transportation, one person appointed to the commission by the Commissioner of Transportation to represent the freight industry, two persons appointed by the council to represent public transit, 10 elected officials of cities within the metropolitan area, including one representative from each first-class city appointed by the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. And then, Mr. Chair, there is one member, one county commissioner from each of the seven counties, and then there are 8 citizens appointed by the Metropolitan Council that represent one represents two council districts. As you know, the Metropolitan Council has 16 districts, and so I appoint one to represent each of the districts. So that's a direct answer to your question. There is suburban coverage there, as well as from Mr. Chair, from the county commissioners.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Our transit ways, as you can see, we have, and this is determined in our transportation policy plan, We have what we term Tier 1 transit ways, Tier 2 transit ways, and then you can see what our existing transit ways are. These transit ways, along with our existing transit service, are to meet our goal of increasing transit ridership by 50% by 2020 and 100% by 2030. In our Tier 1 transit ways, Mr. Chair, you can see we have the Central Corridor, North Star, Cedar Avenue, and the Cedar Avenue Busway, and the I-35W Busway, and Botno Boulevard, formerly known as the Northwest Busway. In the Tier 2 transit ways, you can see we have the Southwest Corridor, the Rush Line, and Red Rock, and our existing transit ways are Hiawatha and the I-394 Hot Lane.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative
Hartman.
What? Representative Hartman.
Oh, Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Belt, just a quick question.
You do look different than Representative Nelson. But your voice sounded like Representative Nelson.
Just a question about this 2030 transitway system. How did these transitways get chosen to be in here?
Mr. Bell?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, we, as I mentioned, we have a transportation policy plan and a transportation system plan. We are going to be updating that in 2008. In the previous one, the Met Council does an extensive analysis and studies that has significant amounts of public input via hearings and other forms, and that's how we came up with these transitways.
Thank you.
Our Tier 1 transitways, a brief a status update on them. The Central Corridor recently received approval from the FTA, the Federal Transit Administration, to enter into preliminary engineering. As I assume all of you are aware, there's essentially three stages to a transitway. There's preliminary engineering, final design, then you get the full funding grant agreement, then you build it. And so we are in the first stage, or we have been allowed into the first stage for Central Corridor. And that is preliminary engineering. That is a process that will take approximately 2 years. Final design will take a year. Then we'll enter into construction. And as all of you are aware, we anticipate an opening date of 2014. The North Star Commuter Rail Service is at the third stage of that. Having gone through preliminary engineering, final design, we are awaiting approval of our full funding grant agreement. As a matter of fact, the council was just hearing some contracts that the council needs to execute in short order to facilitate that process. The Cedar Avenue BRT, we are conducting station planning, expansion of park and ride capacity, and roadway improvements. And when I get into the budget, I will show you the bonding dollars that have been provided for each of these projects. The I-35 BRT, coming up from Lakeville along 35W, we are looking at the 46th Street station, and that will be completed when the Crosstown project is undertaken, and we are doing it at that time because it will be more cost-efficient to do it then. And Botno Boulevard, we got $20 million in the 2002 bonding bill for that BRT. Actually, Hennepin County wants to explore running that in Burlington Northern Santa Fe right-of-way, and Hennepin County is in discussions and negotiations with them regarding that project.
Mr. Bell, is the North Star Commuter Rail, has the state obligation been fully financed as far as we know? Is there any other state or county or local money that has to go into that?
Mr. Chair, it has been fully financed. There's a small amount of startup dollars, about $2.5 million that we are looking at whether Met Council or MnDOT is going to fund that, but the vast majority has. Thank you, Mr. Chair. our transit system, these are the components of our transit system. As I indicated to you at the beginning of my presentation, the Met Council does all the, because we're the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, does all the planning, and then we operate Metro Transit, which is the largest transit provider in the seven-county region. But it is not the only provider in the seven-county region. There are a number of other transportation services that exist. Metro Mobility is one of those, is probably the best known of the other services. There is what we term contracted regular route service. And as its name implies, that's regular route service. So it goes from point A to point B at a designated time, but it is not provided by Metro Transit. And then there are a number of community programs, Dial-A-Ride, other type of programs that are also run. These are in more sparsely populated areas, and they aren't necessarily on a fixed route at a fixed time. And then a number of van pools as well. And the other major component of our seven-county area transit system is the suburban transit providers that historically have been known as the opt-outs. Let me talk about the specific transit services with the largest one, Metro Transit. And what you see on the screen, you see really three things on the screen. You see the seven-county metropolitan area, and then in the black lined area, that is what is known as the transit taxing district. And I'm going to talk a number of times throughout the presentation about the transit taxing district. And then inside the transit taxing district, you can see where the Metro Transit, the largest transit provider, provides services. Other white areas within the black lined area, most of that is where the suburban transit providers operate, or what's called the opt-outs. It's in the transit taxing district, in the white area. Metro Transit, the largest provider, provided almost 74 million rides in 06. That is up 6% from 05. Our goal in 07 is 75 million riders. Incidentally, when I came to the council, we were at about 69 million rides per year. So we have, in spite of reducing some of the service we've provided, in spite of fare increases, in spite of a very difficult and protracted strike, a painful strike, we have increased ridership, I think, fairly significantly and impressively. We provide 93%, or Metro Transit provides 93% of the region's transit. We have 827 buses, 27 rail cars on 113 routes. Metro Transit has almost 2,600 employees. It is by far the largest single component of the Metropolitan Council. And it is the 15th largest transit system in the United States. A little bit of information on the customers of Metro Transit. 82% of trips are for work or school. 40% of the persons who work in downtown Minneapolis take transit. 20% of the people who work in downtown St. Paul take transit, which is a very impressive in my mind. 56% of train riders have household incomes above $50,000. Many people think transit is only used by the indigent. This figure, I think, would challenge that. In fact, 19% of our riders have household income of more than $70,000. We have, though, a percentage of our population who are transit dependent, either by choice or circumstance. 39% of our customers either don't own a car or don't own a car or do not have a car available when they answer the survey question. That's just a brief snapshot of who our customer base is. We also have a number of partnerships, particularly with businesses. The most significant of those is our Metro Pass. This is a deeply discounted annual transit pass that is purchased by employers for the use of their employees. Metro Pass ridership increased 28% in 2006. That's a very, from my perspective, a very impressive figure that it increased that much in 2006. 153 employers use Metro Transit. 31 new employers were added in 2006. Metro Pass employers subsidize the cost of an annual transit pass for employees interested in using transit. Employees typically can purchase on a pre-tax basis. So employees purchase the pass on a pre-tax basis. In addition, employers get state and federal tax advantage. Employers often or pay $828 per employee for the Metro Pass. And most employers ask the employee to contribute $420. So the bottom line is the pass costs $828. The employer pays that, and many of our Metro Pass employers subsidize the cost of that pass to their employees. So the employee pays about half of that. That cost, and they do that with pre-tax dollars. So it is a wonderful benefit for the employee that not only is it provided that subsidy, but the employer subsidizes it, and they do it with pre-tax money. In addition, we have a program called Transit Works. These employers sell transit passes in the workplace. They pass on a 5 or 10% discount to the employee. But this isn't a yearly pass that is provided, but it's another option for employers to use. And finally, we have a major program with universities. It started with our U-Pass. The price of our U-Pass is $62 per semester per student. So a student at the University of Minnesota spends $62 for that semester, either the fall or the winter semester, and they are able to use our facilities. In the fall of 2000, we had 8,200 students. In the fall of 2006, we had 18,000 students. So that is a huge growth from 8,000 in 2000 to 18,600 in 2006. In addition to this, we've got a new go-to-college pass that has participants, a very similar program to the U-Pass, and it is with 13 colleges in the metropolitan area. And if you would like a list of them, Mr. Chair, I'd be willing to provide it.
We have a question. I guess we'll take your questions as we go here. Representative Gray?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bell, I assume that this means, when you say rides, that means a one-way trip. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Just for understanding.
Mr. Chair,
thank you.
Representative, yes. The next slide is what we hope to do in this calendar year. There are a number of things that we have on the drawing board. One is to restructure our Northwest Metro routes. We have a number of areas. We divide our transit system up into areas, and we periodically look at an area of transit service to ensure that it is meeting customer demand and customer need, and equally important that it is efficient. And we have a very simple and primary definition of efficiency, which is the amount of subsidy a particular area or route requires. and we are going to be restructuring that sector. These are called sectors, and we will be, we do this periodically, and the Northwest sector will, we are going to look at that one. A second is to enhance transit safety. We have an excellent safety record. As all of you are aware, we have a transit police force. But I want to even build upon that strong safety record. An example is new buses will have 5 onboard digital cameras, and we are tripling the amount of onboard security. So our transit police in full uniform, we're going to have a larger presence on our transit system. I've often said people will ride transit if it takes them where they want to go, when they want to go there, and they feel safe using it. And so to increase that presence, I feel is important. We want to promote high-frequency service and routes. This is service at least every 15 minutes. We have 14 of those. We want to evaluate next bus arrival info so you can look at a PDA. You're on a bus route and know, not speculate if that bus is going to come in 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but know exactly it'll be here in 2.5 minutes. We also may have, like with rail, you know, something overhead, a digital reader that will say next bus and such a time. We want to improve bus on-time performance from 88% currently to 91%, and we want to expand our go-to smart card fare collection. This is a new technology where you just swipe a card and it will debit an account. Currently, it is used by 40,000 users in our MetroPass and our UPass program. We are also currently piloting it for 2,500 individuals, and we anticipate a full system rollout March 1st.
So now we have another question over here. Let's say Mara.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Your presentation just reminded me to ask you about the fares and subsidy, both from the federal and the state level. Is there a general amount or range of state subsidy for bus fares for Metro Transit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, our subsidies are about 30%. In other words, we collect 30 cents out of a dollar from the fare box. 70% would come from the taxpayer. That is actually better than many of our peers across the country. When I first came to the Metropolitan Council, people said, Peter, there's a good news, bad news story with our transit system. The good news is we're one of the most efficient systems in a comparative sense across the country. The bad news was it's about 70 cents on the dollar that comes from the taxpayer. But that is, when you look at a comparative sense, fairly strong. Within that, there's fluctuation. Our rail system tends to be more, recoups more resources from the passenger. We have routes all over the map. The 16A bus, the 5 bus, you might be 40-50% of fare box recovery. Some other parts of our system, the fare box recovery will be lower. And when we restructure a sector, that is a prime factor that we take into consideration.
Mr. Chair, if I may just follow up and quick follow-up, if I may.
Well, yeah.
Is that percentage changing over the past 5 years, and do you project it to change over the next 5 years?
It's getting better, but it's incremental, Representative. It is going in the right direction, but it is incremental. I don't have the exact figure, but since I've been at the council, perhaps it's improved a point and a half, but it's not a day and night transformation. And part of the improvement has been from two things. Ridership has gone from 69 million rides to about 74 million, and the introduction of the Hiawatha light rail line. There are other factors in play too. It's moving in the right direction, but it's not day and night.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell, we have another question. Representative Hoisting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Bell, it's always good to see you. Thanks for your good work over the years at the Met Council. Similar question. You know, it's hard to plan for politics, and you're a planning agency, but I think there's an extraordinary shift now at the federal level, particularly with Congressman Oberstar. You know, he's already talked about his interest in the rush line and maybe expediting that. Do you see, because of this, changes in the federal piece, particularly for transit waste, since, you know, for these rail lines, it's 50%, and is that a factor, and can we feel a little more optimistic, you know, given these changes in Washington?
Mr. Bell?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, I think that is a fair statement. I think that what was predicted in this region largely happened, and that's that the Hiawatha line, there would be a great deal of consternation. It would hopefully be successful, and Representative, it has been almost by any measure, and I think that has caused people to be somewhat more receptive to more rail lines. It is harder for me to speak, Representative, about any political changes in Washington and the like. That remains to be seen whether we'll have significantly more dollars. I think there is a danger, however, of overpromising how many of these lines we can build for a number of reasons. The federal approval process, if anything, even if there's more money, is getting more difficult. For instance, the federal approval process for Central is much more burdensome and time-consuming than the federal approval process was for Hiawatha. And so even places like Denver, where they have a local revenue source, still, I think, could be in a queue simply because the approval process is so complex and time-consuming. And so resources is one important factor, Representative, but it isn't the only factor. The approval process is quite daunting.
Thank you.
Representative Kuhn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hornstein, for mentioning my favorite project, that is the Rush Line, which is kind of off the bill that should go on the hopper soon. And one of the things my constituents in Chicago County want to know, of course, is the only non-metro county in the metro Mumbai region, and my largest city, North Branch, with 10,000 people, is 29.5 miles from the nearest connection to the transit system. So in some ways we're paying for some of the infrastructure, but it's not really accessible to us, and Rush Line would make it so. My question is actually a follow-up on Representative Morrow's question. My constituents will want to know is there any system in the world or in the country or that you know of where it is entirely funded by ridership and not by any tax subsidy?
Mr. Gough.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, not that I'm aware of. I'm just not aware of that. And it reminds me of, to also comment on Representative Hornstein's question. He said in his question that on the capital side, there's two things. When you look at transit, you got to look at two things. You got to look at what's the cost to build it, what's the cost to operate it. The feds pay 50% of the cost to build it, and virtually nothing to operate it. Sometimes they give you a little bit of what's called CMAC dollars to operate it, but by and large you're on your own to operate it. 50% of the dollars to build it. You could eliminate, if we wanted to build systems on by ourselves, all of the bureaucracy and the like would go away. I personally don't view that as in the cards. I interpret your question as being not on the capital side, but on the operational side. And I know of no system. I'm not aware of any system in this country that doesn't need some subsidy. Though, as I mentioned in an earlier answer, the levels of subsidy vary across different systems. New York, there's less subsidy because it is such a densely populated area and so many people use their system. a while back. This is a bit dated, but I was looking at some comparative data. Cleveland, I think, was under 20% that they got from the fare box. 80% of the dollars came from the taxpayer. So the levels vary across the systems. I'm aware of none that is completely self-sustaining.
Thank you.
Along the lines that you're talking about, do we have sufficient state monies to match any available federal monies that might be available for projects? Are we letting projects go by because we're not able to meet the state part of the deal?
Mr. Chair, I would really say, and one of the things I'm going to get into shortly is what the governor's budget is for transit. And if the governor's budget is enacted, we will be able to provide a match for the Central Corridor. We will be able to, of course, we've provided the match, as I indicated, for North Star, and complete our Tier 1 transit ways. Or Tier 2 transit ways are another matter altogether, but they're fairly far in the future. So for our Tier 1 transit ways, our current budget would allow us to do that, particularly with the passage of the motor vehicle sales tax and the governor's recommendation that he include the sales tax on lease vehicles as a part of that formula. That was a huge additional source of revenue.
Thank you. Representative Hauser?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to go back to your response to Representative Hornstein when you said, one of the things that delayed these projects is Washington and what happens there. And just remembering some of the nightmares of the North Star Corridor. Why do we not do anything about that? I mean, I try to imagine when you think about how much that is cost saved, because every year we don't do something, every year it's delayed, the cost goes up, and that costs taxpayers across the country. Why aren't our congressional delegation, House and Senate, governors across the country insisting that something happen to that Washington process? And just to say it's not acceptable and to just say it's going to change.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, it's interesting you raise that point. I recently had a meeting with Representative Oberstar, and if I would characterize that question as at the center of the discussion that we had. As you well know, Representative, the cost effectiveness index is one of the things that drives this process. I am not going to defend the FTA or the feds other than to say I think they believe they need a process to separate the wheat from the chaff, to separate projects that are going to be efficient and successful, that come in on time and within budget, much like the Hiawatha line did. I think that's what they want to see happen. And I think they're afraid if they don't have a discipline or a standard or a yardstick that we'll have a number of, for lack of a better term, boondoggles. Mm-hmm. Now, is it too cumbersome? Does it cause us a great deal of frustration at the Met Council? Absolutely. That's evident with North Star. We had a huge number of hiccups there. I anticipate the same with the Central Corridor. But I don't think there will be, if I were to look into my crystal ball, I don't think there will be major changes, but there will be some tweaking of the process and the criteria.
And, Mr. Chair, I would have no argument with that reason. My only question is, why can't we do that in 2 months rather than 2 years? I mean, if we give them 2 years, they'll take 2 years. So why wouldn't we say this gets done in 2 months? And it has to do with costs that go up to taxpayers. And, I mean, I just think that would be the issue we would continue to press.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, that is an issue that Representative Obestar heard loud and clear, and I think he is going to look at that very seriously. He expressed a great deal of frustration, much along the same lines that you're talking now, that you are addressing now. Whether anything will be able to be done about it, I don't know. I just don't know.
I try to imagine a business staying in business if they operated. The business would close up shop before.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman, it's so one of the things that is ironic about what you're saying, just as a point of illustration, one of the concerns the FDA has about our current plans with Central Corridor is that we don't have enough of an inflation margin in there. And one of the reasons that is because of the long time frame that they certainly contribute to that it's going to take to build this. So,
and Mr. Chair, I will say that when the council came up with their new number, I argued that, of course, that would be the number if we built it when you say we're going to, but if we just built it earlier than that, the inflation wouldn't be that high.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
cost of the project wouldn't be
yeah.
great.
It's a fair point.
Okay.
Let me continue, if I may, Mr. Chair. We wanted to share with you briefly some of our initiatives regarding the environment. Our transit system is the largest user of fuel in the state of Minnesota, and so we take environmental issues quite seriously, and here are a couple of examples. We use currently ultra-low sulfur fuel. Previous to this, we used low sulfur fuel, and now we are using ultra-low sulfur fuel. And I think it is fair to say we were one of, if not the main user of this, that created a market for this fuel in the state of Minnesota. We use 5% biodiesel in our buses since July of this past year. We are testing, 20% biodiesel. And our use of low sulfur fuel was ahead. There's a federal mandate that kicked in July of 06, and we were about a year ahead of that federal mandate for the use of that. In addition, we are looking at the purchase of hybrid buses. We currently have 3 hybrid buses. It is our intent to purchase 150 hybrid buses by 2011. There's a couple of things that I'd like to bring to the committee's attention. The first is the hybrid buses are more expensive. They cost about $500,000 for a 40-foot bus. Our current buses, our diesel buses, are about $315 million. That's a $185,000 difference. Though the $500,000 cost for the hybrid buses should come down as the technology improves in them and as they get more in use.
Mr.
Chair. Representative Wilson.
Is that cost due to the... Is there batteries in them like the hybrid cars? Is the cost due to that, or is it, and are you looking at ongoing costs of replacing those if they when they go bad, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I do not know the particulars on why the cost is more than that. I assume it has to do with the battery technology that is used in that and the engineering and the like, but the exact particulars of the cost differential, I don't know.
Well, Mr. Bell, aren't there some problems, cold weather problems with the biodiesel or some mechanical problems that was caused by the biodiesel? And that's all been straightened out now? Or?
Mr. Chair, we have been pleasantly surprised by the lack of, we thought that we might experience either performance problems or higher maintenance costs as a result of using 5% of biodiesel, and we have not experienced that. Is that what you were asking?
I thought there were some stall-outs and stuff that you encountered. I know they're not.
We have not had that problem, not with the biodiesel. And as I indicated, we're looking at 20%. In terms of the hybrid, the benefits are clear. This is an important fact. We will use 19,682 fewer gallons of diesel over the 12-year lifespan of the bus. Now, it's important to note the cost savings of the diesel doesn't make up for the $185,000 a difference, but it's still impressive that it's a huge, huge fuel savings. And again, who knows what's going to happen to the price of fuel, whether it's slightly down now, whether it's going to go up or down, and we anticipate the cost of the buses will go down. In addition to the fuel savings, here are some other points to consider. Particulate matter exhaust emissions will be reduced by 91% than the buses that they will be replacing. That's a huge reduction. Nitrogen oxide reduction will be reduced 85%, as well as they will be significantly quieter. So particulate matter, which is essentially soot, nitric oxide reductions, and they will be quieter, in addition to the fuel savings, are the four major benefits of the hybrid buses.
Mr. Bell, our representative leader has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bell, what type of hybrids are those? They aren't diesel or electric. Are they compressed natural gas or natural gas and electric, or what? Do you know what they are?
It's electric and diesel, I believe.
Yeah.
Electric and diesel, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
In addition, a few other facts that I will go over very quickly. This slide shows the significant reduction of 85 tons between that was emitted of particulate matter or soot in 1995 and a reduction in, to 8 tons a year in 2011. So we emitted 85 tons of soot into the atmosphere in 1995, and that's going to be reduced to 8 tons in 2011. This is the result from the implementation of advanced technology, soot filters, diesel engines, hybrid electric technology, and fleet use of biodiesel and ultra-low sulfur fuel. In addition, this next slide shows the significant reduction of nitrogen emissions from 11,065 tons a year in 1995 to what we anticipate will be 200 tons in 2011. This is a result from the implementation of advanced technology diesel engines with exhaust gas recirculation systems and hybrid electric technology, along with the fleet use of biodiesel and ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel. Next, Mr. Chair, I want to talk about I'd like to present a bit of information on the Hiawatha line. As the committee is well aware, we opened this line in June of 2004. It's 12 miles, 17 stations, 27 cars. It has an average ridership of 28,474 a day. That's 148% above expectations. We're going to have a multimodal station to connect with the North Star that will be at the ballpark in downtown Minneapolis. We're doing a 400 space ramp at the 28th Street station. And there's going to be a new station near the Mall of America that we hope to open in late 08 or 09. We feel our fare compliance is good. We have checked 700,000 customers for fares. We have issued 600 citations, 1,200 warnings. The fine is $180. We hope to increase that to 20% of our customers. Mr. Chair, I also mentioned the rail service and Metro Transit are services that we operate. These are contracted services, contracted regular route services. So again, they go from point A to point B at a designated period of time, but they are not run by Metro Transit. We contract them out. What you see on the overhead is a slide of the 7-county metropolitan area. Then the black area is the transit taxing district, and the blue lines are the contracted route services. This is about 5% of our ridership are on these. These include public and these include public and nonprofit providers. Examples are DARTS, Laidlaw, and Senior Community Services. So it is a small part of our overall service operation, but an important one. Our suburban transit authorities are also known as the opt-outs. Opt-outs are very, very important to our overall services. Again, this is a map of the 7-county area. Once again, you see the transit taxing district. And these are our opt-out service providers. Suburban Transit Authority providers include two provider consortiums. One is the Minnesota Valley Transit in the lower right-hand corner, which consists of Apple Valley, Rosemont, Eagan, Burnsville, and Savage. And the Southwest Transit that you see in the left-hand corner, which consists of Eden Prairie, Chanhassen, and Chaska. The other four cities which provide transit service are Maple Grove, Plymouth, Shakopee, and Prior Lake. I would add to you that Maple Grove contracts, this is a peculiar deal here, but Maple Grove contracts with Metro Transit to provide their service for them. So that's a bit of a wrinkle in our overall system. A word or two on the history, John, why don't you go back, of Metro Transit, or the suburban opt-outs. The suburban transit authority providers were designated during the 1980s at a time when the council was levying property taxes for transit operational purposes. The cities that I've just mentioned were allowed to opt out of the regional system and provide their own transit services. These cities were allowed to retain 90% of the transit property tax levied within their communities to provide their own services, and 10% of the levied amount was retained by the council to provide regional services. So in the 80s, we taxed in the transit taxing district for transit operations. Many of those cities felt that they were getting the short end of the stick. They came to the legislature, wanted to opt out. They were allowed to opt out for a period of time, and they were given 90% of the dollars that were levied for their transit operations. 10% came to the Met Council for regional operations. That system is largely intact. As I mentioned to the Senate earlier today, the birthing process was awkward and problematic. I think the system works really very well now. I would characterize this as having a good relationship with the suburban transit providers. They currently receive part of their funding from the motor vehicle sales tax and the MVEST dedication.
And Mr. Bell, who sets the levy? The opt-out community or... On this particular...
No, currently the suburban transit providers receive a proportional share of MVEST, and those revenues equal to the proportion of the total transit property tax that was levied in 2001. So that's the base year. And they get a portion of the motor vehicle sales tax now. Okay. Based upon what the levy...
Levy is set by the Met Council.
That was previous.
Prior to 2000.
Yes. But the levy limits were set by the legislature, and then the Met Council would be allowed to levy up to that limit.
Okay, just for that. Just for that. And Representative Hortman has a question, I think.
Representative Hausen, should go ahead.
Well,
Representative Hausen.
With that property tax takeover, I always thought at the time we should have taken a new look at the opt-outs because they took it over because they were going to do it with their own property taxes. Now they don't. And, of course, the question I always ask is, do they have an unfair advantage over the rest of the system because they have an agreed upon level of service, even though they now don't do it with their property tax.
Mr. Bell?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I'm not sure. I think that they get the proportional share of the MVEST, which of course is a statewide tax because it's on motor vehicle sales. And so I would not argue, I haven't done the analysis that you're talking about, but I would argue that the share that they get is proportional. And they are all within the transit taxing district. And so the transit capital, their citizens are paying for the rolling stock and the like that we at the Met Council levy for. They provide the service, the subsidy comes from MVEST, and the capital comes from our regional transit bond.
Right.
My question's pretty quick. You said one of them contracted back with Metro Transit to provide the services. Did you say that was Maple Grove?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
The next slide I'd like to show you has to do with our park and rides. This is a very important part of our service. It essentially is artificial density. It brings people together so that we can provide transit more efficiently. Never were the words truer that if you build it, they will come. We can't build these fast enough. If you take transit and you get there by 8 or 8:30, you're often left without a spot. Capacity is increased by spaces 177% since 1999. Usage has increased by 223%. We now have 20,100 spaces, park and ride spaces in the seven county region, and it is something that we are always anxious to further develop. And here is just a map of some of our park and ride facilities.
Representative Reeder has a question on this.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bell. Some of those are ramps, but most of that's on surface or surface parking. Is that correct? Are you ever contemplating building more ramps or not?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, you're correct in saying most of our park and rides are surface lots. Some of them are structured parking. I think the easiest simple answer is it's just always a function of cost.
Thank you.
Metro Mobility, Mr. Chair, is another major component of our overall transit picture in the seven county area. A couple of points I think it is important to underscore. The federal government mandates that service be provided to 3/4 of a mile from a regular route service during the times that that route operates. The legislature, however, has mandated that service be provided throughout the entire transit taxing district. It is important for the committee to understand we provide more metro mobility service than the feds require us to provide. So if we run a bus down University Avenue, we are to provide metro mobility service 3/4 of a mile on each side during the same period of operation. Our metro mobility coverage area goes throughout the entire transit taxing district. Average subsidy per passenger is projected to be $21.20 for 2006. Metro Mobility contracts with community-based providers for services in Anoka, Washington, Dakota, and Scott County. Each rider is assigned to a specific service provider based on their home address. Transfers are made between the county providers and Metro Mobility's primary provider when necessary. People that live in a buffer zone between two services or dual service provider areas can use either provider serving that area to avoid making a transfer. It's important to note that we have to certify people are eligible to use Metro Mobility, and we have I believe one of the lowest denial rates for services in the country. I think it's under 5%. Well, it's less than 1%. Next area is our community programs. These programs largely, but do not totally, operate outside of the transit taxing district. You can see by the map, again, where many of these exist. Dial-a-ride programs exist in areas with lower density and where regular route service is not available or available only during high-demand times. The council subsidies for these, there's 18 community-based programs, range from $2.75 to $11.86 per passenger trip. The average council subsidy per trip in 2006 was $5.74. Essentially, the council pays about three-fifths of the cost, and local communities pay for two-fifths of the cost of the community programs that exist. This next slide shows a dollar road program that is available within Ramsey and Hennepin County. When compared to the countywide programs shown on the previous slide, these programs operate in a much more restricted service area. A few programs, as this indicates, operate inside the transit taxing district, the majority of them outside. This slide, and I'll be quick with this, just shows you our transit ridership from 1996 to the present time. As I believe I indicated to you, when I came to the council, we had about 70 million riders, and we project next year to have about 75 million riders. And this is in spite of the strike that I spoke of, 13% fewer buses on the street, and a number of fare increases. Transit financing. And was there, did we want to pass, were we going to pass out a packet, a special packet?
We're scheduled to be out of here at 5:30, so I don't know if we're going to get to the governor's budget.
We will.
Okay.
I will speed it up. Very quickly, this is our calendar year 2007 operating budget for all of the transit services I just referred to. It is $324 million. The bulk of our resources come from three sources: MVEF, the State General Fund, and passenger fares on the revenue side. On the expense side, you can see Metro Transit is at 70%, the green area, and then going to the right, Metro Transit runs the rail service, and that's 6%, and so Metro Transit's about 76% of our entire budget. Capital, I'll be quick with this. It's important to know, as I mentioned earlier, that we look at transit in two ways: the cost of capital and then the cost to operate our system. These are sources of capital. These are federal sources of capital that I'm going to talk about first, and they're at the lower part of your page. Title III, these are formula funds. In federal fiscal year 06, that's $42.5 million. The best way I think to think of federal formula dollars is these are based on service. So if geographic area A has X amount of transit service, then they pretty well receive federal formula dollars based on the level of transit service that is provided in that particular geographic region. This is used, those formula dollars are used for system maintenance, for buses, fixing garages, maintaining park and rides, technology improvements, and the like. The second area is Title I. That's CMAQ dollars, and that stands for Congestion Mitigation and Air Quality. These are for projects that are shown to have an impact on improving air quality, and these dollars are principally dispersed through the TAB process that I discussed at the beginning of our conversation. And the third is discretionary funds, and this amount depends on how much Congress allocates to these specific projects. These are commonly known as earmarks. Everyone has heard a great deal of discussion about earmarks and will they stay or different criteria for them. But we have been a major recipient of these earmarks. These are to purchase buses and the like. And I guess it's anyone's guess whether they will, what will happen with them. And finally, it's New Starts dollars, and these are used for our transitways, Hiawatha, North Star, and Central Corridor. Very quickly, Mr. Chair.
We have a question from Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bell, do you have the same problem that highways do? Do you have to worry about matching as far as your discretionary? Are you losing some, or are you getting everything you can match?
No, we have to match dollars. When we get federal dollars, there's different match provisions that are a part of them. That's correct. Particularly with some of the earmarks.
Mr. Chair.
I love your leader.
Thank you. Mr. Bell, are you losing, like the highways have not been able to match in the last year, and that's a question I was wondering about.
The answer to that, I would say, is no, but I'll let the staff correct me on that. I said I got it right. God, wonders never cease. The state bonds for transit, Mr. Chair, these are, this is just a quick overview of our bonding that we have received. I won't go through all of it, but you can see the various projects that we have bonded for going back to 1999, and I'll trust that the committee members will look at that at their leisure. Regional transit capital bonds, these are bonds that are paid for by the council's property tax levy. This is to purchase buses, park and rides, garages, to do repairs, equipment. Some of this money is to provide matching funds for those CMAC grants that I talked about. This provides, and these dollars, it's important to note, provide capital for Metro Transit, the Suburban Transit Authorities, also known as the opt-outs, Metro Mobility, the contracted route providers, and community-based programs. So these bonding dollars are used for all of the transit providers that I talked about. A word or two about the transit taxing district. I've referred to it a number of times. Here's what it is. The transit taxing district is the area where the Metropolitan Council levies property taxes just for the capital side of our transit activities. Because of this, this has traditionally been the boundary where regular route service is provided. One question and concern that continues to get raised is that there are a number of people outside of the transit taxing district that use services inside the transit taxing district. And so they are not being, now they buy cars, so they pay the motor vehicle sales tax. Some of our money comes from the general fund, so I want to be clear, they participate in that. But they do not pay for any of the capital, the construction of park and rides and things like that. This map was created by writing down the license plate of persons using park and rides and then mapping where those persons live. 25% of the persons using the region's park and ride facilities come from outside of the transit taxing district. And as I mentioned, they don't pay the capital part of our budget. They pay some of the operating part, but not the capital part. Here's an important point. Piece of information, because there's been a lot of discussion about should anything happen with the transit taxing district. If the transit taxing district was extended to the entire seven-county metropolitan area, the effect would be a $4 reduction on the property tax for people inside the district on a $250,000 home, and a $25 increase for persons outside the transit taxing district for a $250,000 home. So I'm not advocating or advancing that. It's a question that we get quite often is, what is the transit taxing district? How did it come about? What would happen? Who uses the facilities? And what would happen if the entire seven-county region were put in it? One further point very quickly. In law, it states that cities can opt into the transit taxing district by mutual agreement. Of course, the difficulty there is that a city would have, a city council would hesitate to raise their hand to be in the transit taxing district unless you are going to provide them some immediate transit service. And they may be getting as much transit service as someone who's already inside the district.
A quick question, Mr. Chair.
That's important.
Just those numbers you went over, $4 reduction in the household property tax at a $250,000 home in the district, and what was the increase on the homes?
$25 increase for a home, for a $250,000 home outside of the transit taxing district.
I think we have more votes inside the line.
This map just indicates the people who use our services, who are use our park and ride services, who are outside the seven county region. The white area is people from Wisconsin. We can't get that data. But as you can see where the seven county region is, and we've got a lot of people who use our transit services outside of the seven county metropolitan area, and we wanted to make that known. I believe you have a handout.
Mr. Chair, while we're waiting for the handout. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a quick observation that I imagine just not in my constituency up just north of Forest Lake there, that one thing that the map doesn't show are the folks who would use if the opportunities were available to them. And I know just from having gone out 10,000 bills this last fall that that the potential is out there and hard to capture. But one thing we need to keep in mind is how to reach the folks who would use it that don't have access now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, I think that's a fair point, in that we just don't have a real precise way of gathering that. What is being passed out to you is the governor's recommendation, and there's a couple of things that I will summarize so that I can answer any questions that you may have.
I'm going to introduce, because the people who are passing these out are apparently now our permanent pages, and that's Megan Gamble and Michael Lance. And this was their hour to shine here today when they passed out the brochures. And also, please leave these budgets in your folders when we get through them today. Thank you. Mr. Bell?
A couple of things that I think it is important to note with the governor's budget. One is that, as I indicated, the motor vehicle sales tax is a major component of our revenue stream. And one of the difficulties we've had with the motor vehicle sales tax is the inability to get good forecasting on its performance. The inability to get good forecasting on its performance has resulted in a problem for the council. And that problem is that we have a shortfall in this fiscal year 07, that ends July 1st, of about $8 million. That's because it is not performing as it was projected to perform. In addition, we have a shortfall of $23.5 million for fiscal year 08-09. Now, the governor has, in his budget, proposes to address both of those problems in two ways. The first way he proposes to address that problem is as through the surplus for fiscal year 07. So for the rest of this year, the approximate $8 million shortfall, I'm talking about state fiscal year that ends July 1st, he is proposing to use some of the surplus monies to cover our deficit. For fiscal year 08-09, the $23.5 million, the governor is proposing to include in the MVEST formula the sales tax on leased vehicles. And that will make us whole for the shortfall in the projection for the next biennium. Now, that's predicated on a couple of things. The 60-40 split, that's a key point, and also within the 40% that the Met Council gets 38%, that the rural-urban split is 38-2. Now, there's been a lot of discussions of things other than 38-2, but our problem magnifies if we don't get the 38. The governor's proposal is based upon 38%, 60-40 first, and then of the 40, we get 38. Greater Minnesota gets a 2%. And with that, we would have a maintenance of effort, a budget, that would allow us to meet our system plan goal of increasing ridership by 50% by 2020 and build the Tier 1 transitways. That's what it would allow us to do.
Mr. Bell, as an indication that if we get a February forecast that changes radically here or even changes, that we're going to adjust these figures?
We'd have to consult with the governor on that, either if they go up or if they go down. My understanding is the Department of Finance is recalibrating their forecasting mechanism. And the committee should understand, we only budget 95% of the anticipated MVEST revenue, and it has even performed below that. So it's when it was, everyone was quite excited when the revenue forecast in November was so rosy, but when you delve into the numbers, some things, of course, performed much better than expected. And our area, our funding source, the motor vehicle sales tax, performed much less well.
Thank you.
In addition, $32 million will be requested for a regional transit capital bond authorization. So that means you would authorize us to levy $32.2 million. I talked about earlier those regional transit bonds. It provides capital for all of our system. And it provides, here's an important point, for activities outside of the transit taxing district. It's an important point to understand. And $50 million in trunk highway bond authorization, this would allow us to provide transit-related services on trunk highways, attached to trunk highways. And finally, Mr. Chair, here is a comparison of our budget from 06-07 to 08-09. It's a fairly straightforward comparison. I would draw your attention to a couple of key points. One is the federal dollar amount you see on the right-hand side, a change of 13%. Those were CMAQ dollars, the congestion mitigation air quality dollars. We had some of those dollars that we could use to operate the Hiawatha Light Rail Line. They usually allow you 3 years of operations for those, and those are in fact going away. And so that's an important thing to understand. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for further questions.
Questions from members? I know you want to ask a question.
Okay, I'll ask a question. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Bell, I have a... Well, I guess you're not Commissioner, are you? Chairman, so. Do you have an expression of the amount of greenhouse gas reduction that that Metro Transit is responsible for. You talked about your agency being the largest user of fuel in the state. However, the amount of fuel that your fleet uses is a much smaller number than the amount of fuel that would be used if your fleet wasn't out there bringing people to and from work. And I'm just wondering if you, you know, I know on the North Star Commuter Rail, one of the expressions of value for the line to get the federal funding was how much VOCs wouldn't be in the air and how much, you know, carbon wouldn't be in the air. Do you know how much greenhouse gas emission reduction there is because we have Metro Transit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, I don't have that information readily available. We do collect additional information. I'm not sure it's in the specific format that you're looking for, that then I provided about the particulate matter that goes into the air and the like by the cars that we take off of the road. Essentially, we are asking for, if I understand correctly, the trade-off. Look, if you got these buses and trains, if you didn't have those, people would be driving. Mm-hmm. How many cars are taken off the road as a result of that, and what is the admission of those cars that are no longer driving, is really what the question is. I believe we do have that information. We do. We
can get. If you have the NOx, you probably have all of it.
We can get that to you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Well,
Mr. Chair,
just maybe before we. Before we adjourn, this is President Hortman set up a nice transition point, which is to remind everyone on the committee. I don't know if Representative Leader, you were going to talk about our meeting on Tuesday. Or, okay, you'll do that? Okay, great. Thanks. Which gets to this very issue.
The announcement is that next Tuesday there is a meeting. The committee is attending the joint House and Senate presentation on global warming in the House chambers. Please RSVP to Abby's as there will be assigned seating. There will be television set up for the public to view. So the next meeting will be February 1. Oh, and the meeting is at 4 o'clock in the House chambers. Okay.
Mr. Chair, one more announcement. I sent an email to everybody about the February 1st pricing, road pricing seminar that the Citizens League is putting on. So I think that should be very interesting in light of Representative Leader's interest in the topic and the Governor's interest in the topic.
That's the seminar that's available.
It starts really early in the morning on Thursday, February 1st. And we have session at 10, but we should be able to attend some of it for those of us who are interested.
Representative Hausman.
Representative Leader, do you know how are we accommodating the public for that joint hearing in the House chamber?
There will be television set up for the public to view. Other than that, thank you very much for your presentation, and we're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.